Okay, so it's Monday, June 12th. So here we go. Your operation of the God-given ability. Past couple of weeks, we've been looking at a lot at Moses because we're looking at the impartation manifestations of believing, working of miracles, and gifts of healings. And when it comes to miracles, boy, Moses was one that God worked with. He taught him how to do miracles very simply. He went with him step by step, told him exactly what to do, and Moses followed the instructions, and this just amazing things happened. And for the most part, Moses didn't know what was going to happen until God told him to do whatever it was. There were some that God told him in advance, like the water turning into blood and the rod turning into a serpent and back again. But when they came to the Red Sea, Moses had no idea that the water was going to part until God told him what to do, to hold your rod over the water and part the sea. So Moses did what he was told, and God made the waters part. And then there's a lot of other things that happened after that, and we're going to look at a few of them. And then we'll look at some other people that did miracles, like Joshua and Elijah and Elisha. And then we'll look at Jesus Christ, and then we'll look at the book of Acts to see what believers that have the same gift that we have, how they operated there. So we're in this for the long haul. There's no rush on these things. We just want to make sure we learn everything there is to learn. So I'd like to go to Exodus 17, and this is very shortly after the Red Sea incident. Everybody got all excited about it. They were singing God's praises and so happy that that all happened, but it didn't take long before the people got discouraged because they ran out of water to drink. And they're thirsty, and their kids are thirsty, and their animals are thirsty. And some of them got to some pretty bad complaining. So we'll read this starting in verse 1. It says, "And all the congregation of the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys, according to the commandment of the Lord, and pitched in Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink." And it doesn't take long to get feeling thirsty and thinking, we're thirsty now, there's no water to drink, we're all going to die of thirst. Verse 2 says, "Wherefore the people did chide with Moses." That means they argued with him, and they railed at him, and they complained to him. And they said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said to them, "Why chide ye with me? Wherefore do ye tempt the Lord?" And the people thirsted there for water, and the people murmured against Moses and said, "Wherefore is this that thou hast brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst?" These people walked right through the Red Sea, and they saw the Egyptian army dead, and now they're saying, "Why did you take us out of Egypt? Because we're all going to die." So they're accusing Moses of attempted mass murder here, that you're going to kill us all with thirst. And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, "What shall I do unto this people? They be almost ready to stone me." So again, Moses didn't know what to do. He's just following God's directions. And he had a little space where God wasn't talking to him. He's listening to the people, and he's getting a little concerned for his life. He's thinking, these people are going to stone me. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Go on before the people, and take with thee of the elders of Israel, and thy rod, wherewith thou smotest the river, take in thine hand, and go." So he has some instructions now. "Behold, I will stand before thee there upon the rock in Horeb." This is the place where God had met Moses in the burning bush, and where in another couple of chapters he's going to speak to the children from the top of the mountain that will be on fire and smoke and give the Ten Commandments. But this is in between those things. So he said, "I'm going to stand there upon the rock Horeb, and thou shalt smite the rock." You're going to hit it. And the rock is, it's not like a little rock, it's the big rock face of this mountain, Mount Horeb. So you're going to smite the rock, and there shall come water out of it, that the people may drink. So now Moses knows what to do. Up to this point, he didn't have a plan of his own, except to go wherever God told them to go and do whatever God told them to do. But the people were losing confidence in Moses, saying, he brought us out of Egypt, but he doesn't have a plan. He hasn't thought through water to drink. What kind of leader is he? But now God gave him all the information that he needed, and he's the best kind of leader, the one that relies upon God and doesn't try to figure it out for himself. So God told him what to do, and at the end of verse 6 it says, and Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. So he did so. Did exactly what God told him, when God told him to do it, where he told him to do it, and the exact manner. He took his rod and he smote the rock in the sight of the people. And then what God said would happen, of course, did happen. Water came out of the rock. Who would have even expected that? You know, that's not the normal way to find water. You know, usually you dig in the ground or something like that. But to hit a rock face with a stick and have enough water to come out to satisfy 2-3 million people and all the animals that they had. And not one of them died from thirst. They thought they were going to die, but they didn't die. So we read this one. There's another similar record in Numbers 20. And we're going to read that one as well. Numbers chapter 20, verse 1 says, then came the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, into the desert of Zin in the first month. And the people abode in Kadesh. And Miriam died there and was buried there. And there was no water for the congregation. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And the people chode with Moses. They chided with him like they did back in Exodus 17. The people chode with Moses and spake, saying, would God that we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. So this is a number of years later. A number of the people had died in the wilderness, but it's a few years out. So they're saying, we would have been better off if we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. And why have you brought up the congregation of the Lord into this wilderness that we and our cattle should die there? And wherefore, why have you made us to come up out of Egypt to bring us in unto this evil place? It is no place of seed or of figs or of vines or of pomegranates. Neither is there any water to drink. So not only are they complaining about the current circumstances, they're complaining about what God had done for them so far in getting them out of the bondage of Egypt, the thing that he had promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that he would do. So they think they're just speaking against Moses and Aaron, but they're speaking against God, and they're speaking against God's word, which puts them in a very bad place. And Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and they fell upon their faces. And the glory of the Lord appeared unto them. They fell on their faces because they're in great distress, and they just come to God and say, okay, God, we don't know what to do. They just fell on their faces before God. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take the rod. That same one that he had used to smite the Nile River with and turn it to blood, and the same one that he used last time to smite the rock and take water out. He said, take the rod and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth his water. And thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock, so shalt thou give the congregation and their beasts drink. So these instructions are a little different from the other time, because he said, you're going to take your rod, and you and Aaron are going to go before not just the elders, but the whole assembly, and you're going to speak to the rock. Speak to it before their eyes, and it shall give forth his water. So this was the instruction that God gave them. And remember, every other time, Moses did exactly what God said to do, where he said to do it, when he said to do it, and in the exact manner that he said to do it. Verse 9 says, and Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him. So far, so good. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, Hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch water out of this rock? Must we fetch you water out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts. Now, is there any difference between what God told them to do and what he did? Yes, God said to speak to the rock. He didn't say to smite it, but Moses spoke to the people, and he smote the rock twice. He got the result of water coming out so that the people were satisfied. But let's see what God has to say to Moses after this. Verse 12, And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, and said, Because you believed me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. This is the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel strove with the Lord, and he was sanctified in them. Meribah means contention or strife. So God was not happy with Moses and with Aaron at the time, because they did part of what he said to do, got everybody together at the right place. He said to take the rod, but he said to speak to the rock. And Moses didn't do exactly what God said to do in the way that he said to do it. He took his rod and he, boom, boom, hit the rock twice. So God was still very gracious in having the water come out to take care of the needs of the people. But this is the only one time that we can see that Moses didn't do things exactly the way that God told him. And later on, God will remind him of this. You know, when he shows him the promised land before he dies, he said, I'm going to show it to you so you can see it, but you're not going to go in because of this thing that happened right here. So it was a sad day for Moses. But let's look at some other things that were happier times. Exodus chapter 15. So this one is another water incident, and this actually happened between the Red Sea and the first time that God had Moses smite the rock at Mount Horeb. This happened very shortly after they went through the Red Sea, and Miriam the prophetess, it says she got a timbrel in her hand, and she was dancing and singing and praising God for his mighty power. But we're going to pick it up in verse 22, where it says, So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. So it wasn't called Marah originally, but it was called Marah after they were not able to drink of the waters because the waters were bitter. This reminds me in the book of Ruth, where Naomi, Ruth's mother-in-law, when she came back to her hometown in Israel, said, Don't call me Naomi, which means pleasant, but call me Marah, which means bitter. She said, The Lord has dealt bitterly with me. She had lost her husband and her 2 sons. So that word Marah means bitter. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, What shall we drink? And he cried unto the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, which when he had cast into the waters were made sweet. And there he made for them a statute and an ordinance, and there he proved them. So thankfully at this time they ran out of water, and they did murmur against Moses, saying, What shall we drink? But it wasn't as severe as the other times where they were ready to go back to Egypt and really railing at him. So before it got to that point, Moses cried to the Lord, and God showed him that tree that he cast into the waters. So this tree must have had properties that healed the waters and made them sweet, but he would not have known that without God revealing that to him. So this was a word of wisdom, God telling them what to do, giving him the guidance that he needed that he would not have known by the 5 senses. And it produced the needed result. The waters were made from bitter to sweet, and they could drink it, and everybody was fine. While the waters were bitter, they couldn't drink it. It would have been harmful to them, but now it was okay. Now in verse 26, God said, "If thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and wilt do that which is right in his sight, and wilt give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that healeth thee." And there's a figure of speech there. I don't believe that God made the people sick intentionally. But the Egyptians were people that didn't recognize God. They didn't honor God as God before they saw the miracles that Moses did. But they worshipped other gods. And he said, you know, they got all these diseases. He didn't heal them because they weren't even asking him to heal them. They're praying to the other gods, and God's not going to do things for the people that they asked somebody else to do. They're on their own, right? But these are God's people. They had God's word. They'd seen God's power, and they had believed God. It seemed like they wavered in their believing from time to time, but he gave them a condition, an if thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, if thou wilt do that which is right in his sight, if you will give ear to his commandments, if you'll keep all his statutes, then I will put none of these diseases upon thee, which I've brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that healeth thee. So he was Yahweh or Jehovah is the Lord that healeth thee. I'm going to heal you. So if you get sick, I'm not going to just let it go and consume you. I'm going to heal you. But he did give them a condition to diligently hearken and obey him. So this is a little different than gifts of healings, okay? Because gifts of healings, there's no conditions except to believe, right? Gifts of healings don't require diligent hearkening and obedience to the law. It's just, it's a gift. It's given to the person who needs it to receive it. So there's a difference in this thing that God said in verse 26 and what we have in our administration. Just wanted to point that out. Now, let's go to Psalm 105. We've seen a lot of miracles, workings of miracles that Moses did with God telling them exactly what to do, Moses following the instructions, you know, God making sure that the results came to pass, but a man working together with God. And Lynn had a question last week at the end of last week's session with the Red Sea, because there was one verse that God told Moses to divide the waters, as if Moses was to do it, make it happen. And then you see that when Moses followed God's instructions by holding his rod over the water when God told him to do it, it says that God made the waters part by causing a strong east wind that divided the waters. So just to clarify whether it was God causing it to happen or whether it was Moses causing it to happen, the answer is both, okay? There's that phrase in Corinthians, workers together with God, okay? Moses was a worker together with God. So God gave Moses the instructions. It was important that he carried out the instructions that God gave him for the thing to happen that God said would happen. Now, God made sure that the thing happened because, you know, holding a rod over the water physically does not divide it. But it was necessary for him to hold the rod over the water so that God could do that at the proper time and cause it to happen. God just didn't do it independently of Moses, and Moses didn't do it independently of God. They were working together in coordination. And that's how these things happen. And the life of Jesus Christ, you know, we'll see that he did everything at God's direction. He spoke the words God told him to speak. He did the works that God showed him to do. And it's going to be the same for us. When we're walking with God, synchronized with God, then these things can come to pass. Now, Moses not only did a lot of miracles, but I want to look at some of the healings involved with Moses, okay? We saw with the healing of the waters, and God said that I am the Lord that healeth thee. There's a few other things regarding healing that have to do with Moses. That's why I want to look at Psalm 105, and we'll start in verse 26. It says, he sent Moses, his servant, and Aaron, whom he had chosen. They showed his signs among them and wonders in the land of Ham. What's the land of Ham? Well, remember, Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Ham is the son of Noah that settled in Africa. And his son, Mizraim, is the one who founded the nation of Egypt, because the word Egypt is translated from the Hebrew word Mizraim, which was the name of Noah's grandson. Okay? That's why it was in the land of Ham, Mizraim's father, son of Noah. Verse 28, he sent darkness and made it dark. Remember where they couldn't see anything for 3 days? Nobody moved out of their places. And they rebelled not against his word. He turned their waters into blood and slew their fish. The water became actual blood, not just red water, but actual blood. And the fish died. Their land brought forth frogs in abundance in the chambers of their kings. So even the king and his household, they had frogs in all their bedrooms and stuff. He spake, and there came divers sorts of flies and lice in all their coasts. He gave them hail for rain and flaming fire. Remember when it hailed, there was fire that ran along the ground? He smote their vines also and their fig trees, and brake the trees of their coasts. This is what the hail did. He spake, and the locusts came, and caterpillars, and that without number. So the locusts ate everything that the hail had left. And they did eat up all the herbs in their land, and devoured the fruit of their ground. He smote also the firstborn in their land, the chief of all their strength. He brought them forth also with silver and gold, because God commanded all the women to borrow jewelry from their Egyptian neighbors, and they were happy to give it to them. And look at the second half of verse 37. And there was not one feeble person among their tribes. And this is at the time that they left Egypt. There was not one feeble person. Out of 2 to 3 million people, can you imagine not one feeble person? I mean, generally, if you get 20 people, usually there's several of them that are sick at any one time, right? Feeling a little wheezy myself here. But there were 2 to 3 million, was it 600,000 footmen, plus wives and children and older parents. And not one was feeble. So that scene in the Ten Commandments when they're leaving Egypt and they're carrying some people on stretchers, it didn't happen that way. Everybody was walking on foot, and not one feeble person. Now, were there very likely some feeble people in the crowd before this happened? There would have to be. You know, in any population, there's going to be some feeble people, but it says there was not one. That means a lot of them got healed. A lot of them had to have gotten healed in eating the Passover. Remember, they had to put the blood on the door, and that saved the life of the firstborn. But it would have been in the eating of the flesh of the lamb that it gave them strength. And whoever needed healing, they were healed. And it doesn't say that Moses went around individually ministering healing to people. It was in the eating of the Passover that so many were healed that there was not one feeble person among their tribes. It says so right here. Now, it does say in chapter 17, after they had been through that period of thirst where Moses smote the rock, it says that there were some feeble people that the Amalekites attacked in the rear, but they were feeble for lack of water for that period of time. Nobody died, but there were some people that were hurting physically because of the lack of water until they could get that water. And it says the Amalekites, they came and they attacked the people in the back of the crowd that were a little feeble and weak. But on the night of the Passover, when they left Egypt, not one feeble person at all. Not one. That indicates tremendous healing. Now, Numbers 12. This regards Miriam, Moses' sister. In verse 1 it says, and Miriam and Aaron, Moses' big sister, big brother, of course they're all in their 80s, but Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses, because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. Now Moses had already married with Zephora from the land of Midian, so he had taken, apparently, a second wife who was Ethiopian, and they were speaking against Moses because of this. Verse 2, and they said, hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us? And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. He was a humble man. He was meek to God, and he was humble. He was not a big stuck-up fellow. He was not a hot shot. He just did what God told him to do. He was very meek. And the Lord spake suddenly unto Moses, and unto Aaron, and unto Miriam, come out, ye three, unto the tabernacle of the congregation. And they three came out. They all three of them heard God speak to them. And the Lord came down in the pillar of the cloud, and stood in the door of the tabernacle, and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both came forth. And he said, hear now my words, listen to me. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision, and will speak unto him in a dream. My servant Moses, not so, who is faithful in all mine house, with him will I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches, and the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. Wherefore, then, were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? So God's standing up for his man, even to his brother and sister. He's not going to stand for them speaking against Moses. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. And the cloud departed from off the tabernacle, and behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow, her skin all white and flaky. All of a sudden, when the cloud left, she had leprosy. And Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. Now, it was the job of the high priest to examine someone that had leprosy and determine whether they really had that disease or not. So he examined her and said, yeah, this is leprosy. You know, it wasn't just an effect. It really was leprosy. And Aaron said unto Moses, alas, my Lord, I beseech thee, lay not the sin upon us, wherein we have done foolishly, and wherein we have sinned. So he realized now that it was foolish for them to speak against Moses, just because he had married an Ethiopian woman, and they didn't approve of that. Let her not be as one dead, of whom the flesh is half consumed when he cometh out of his mother's womb. And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, heal her now, God, I beseech thee. So what did he do in light of Miriam needing healing? He cried to the Lord, and he asked God to heal her. And the Lord said unto Moses, if her father had but spit in her face, should she not be ashamed 7 days? Let her be shut out from the camp 7 days, and after that let her be received in again. So God, in essence, said, yes, I will heal her, but I'm going to do it in 7 days. She's going to put up with this for 7 days because I'm reproving her for what she said about you. Okay? That was wrong. So she's going to put up with this for 7 days. And Miriam was shut out from the camp 7 days, and the people journeyed not until Miriam was brought in again. And afterward the people removed from Hazeroth and pitched in the wilderness of Paran. So God did heal her. And she was, at that point, completely healed with no leprosy. So this was a healing. And the healing was accomplished by Moses asking God to heal her. He interceded for her in prayer. Okay? And God did it. He did it on his terms, rather than just on Moses' terms, but he did heal Miriam, but 7 days later. Now, this reminds me of that sign that God showed Moses to do in Exodus chapter 4, so let's quickly look at that again, because it is in the healing category. It was considered a sign in the miracle category, but it was a miracle of healing. So after God instructed Moses to throw down his rod and it became a serpent and pick it up by the tail and it became a rod again, verse 6 says, and the Lord said furthermore unto him, put now thine hand into thy bosom. And he put his hand into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous as snow. Didn't just look like leprosy, it was really physically leprosy in his hand. And that's the only part of his body that had leprosy. And he said, put thine hand into thy bosom again. And he put his hand into his bosom again and plucked it out of his bosom. And behold, it was turned again as his other flesh, that fast, within a couple of seconds. So that was a miracle, but it was in the healing category. God first caused it to have the leprosy, but then he caused it to be completely, completely healed within seconds. Just kind of cool. Let's look at another healing episode. This is in Numbers 21, in verse 4. It says, and they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to compass the land of Edom. It means they circled around it instead of going through it, because Edom was Esau, all the descendants of Esau, and God did not allow them to mess with the Edomites at all, and the Edomites did not want to let the people go through their land, so God had them go around the land of Edom. And the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. So it must have been very difficult traveling on foot through that land. And the people spake against God. Never a good idea. People spake against God, even if it seems right. Some people just complain and they let their mouths go because they think they're right in what they're saying, but it's wrong anyway. They think they're right. They think they're speaking the truth, but it's not right. They spake against God and against Moses. And we know how God feels about people speaking against Moses, but he's not also happy about people speaking against him. But look what they said. Wherefore have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no bread, neither is there any water, and our soul loatheth or hates this light bread. What's the light bread they're talking about? The manna. God provided manna. He's feeding 2 to 3 million people every day, 40 years. I don't know how many tons of manna he's providing for them, but he's providing food for them every day that's good for them, keeps them healthy, keeps them strong. And now they're complaining about what God is doing for them. They're complaining about God having brought them out of Egypt. They're complaining about the food that God is providing for them. Here's God's response in verse 6. And the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people. These would be poisonous snakes. And they bit the people, and much people of Israel died. Not just a few of them, but a lot of them. Therefore the people came to Moses and said, we have sinned. Good thing that they recognized that. Too late for some of them. But they said, we have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against thee. And they're right, that's what they did, and that was missing the mark in both counts. And they said, pray unto the Lord that he take away the serpents from us. And Moses prayed for the people. What a good man. How compassionate was he. They had spoken against him and against God, and now they come back and said, oh, pray for us so God takes away all these snakes. And he did. He prayed for the people. He cared for them. Even though they didn't deserve it, he cared for them. But he also saw that they had a big change of heart at this point. And the Lord said unto Moses, make thee a fiery serpent, and set it upon a pole, and it shall come to pass that every one that is bitten, when he looketh upon it, shall live. So he prayed for them. You know, they're dying of snake bites. He prayed for them. Okay, this is the first thing he did. He prayed for the people. And then God talked to Moses in response to his prayer. He didn't just heal them. He told Moses what to do for them to be healed. Okay? Make a fiery serpent, put it on a pole, and then everyone that is bitten by one of these snakes, if he looks at that serpent on the pole, he will live. And Moses made a serpent of brass. So he made it of shiny brass metal in the form of a serpent, and he put it upon a pole, upright pole, and it came to pass that if a serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of brass, he lived. Isn't that wonderful that God provided a way for them, even if they had been bitten, to get healed, to not die as others had done, but to live? And we know that the snake bites are still just as poisonous, and they're not getting any snake venom antidote. They're just looking at this brass snake on the pole. And if they will do that, then they will live and not die. Now, interesting thing about this, if you go to Deuteronomy chapter 8, Moses makes a statement about what had happened during those 40 years in the wilderness. And verse 15 of Deuteronomy 8 says, "Who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water, who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint." So that gives a little bit more detail regarding the things that had happened. Those incidents with the rock, it wasn't like a porous rock of limestone. It was a rock of flint. Flint doesn't hold water. And yet, water came out of that rock of flint. And it says that there were fiery serpents and scorpions in that land. And they were there all along. They were there all along. So all that time that they were there, the people are there in the same place that the fiery serpents are. What's God doing? He's protecting the people all along from the serpents and from the scorpions. I don't think it even mentions anybody being bit by scorpions, but there were scorpions there, but they didn't bite the people. There were serpents there all along, and except for that one time, they didn't bite anybody. Nobody got hurt by serpents except for that one time when God showed them that, look, you complain about what I am doing for you, regarding the manna and bringing you out of Egypt and all. Just want to let you experience for a very short time what it would be like if I were not doing some things for you, like protecting you from these snakes that had been here all along. So for just a very short time, I'm going to stop protecting you from these things and see what happens. All of a sudden, these snakes come and they start biting the people and they start dying. And then he gives them a way to be healed. And so much of what God does here with these people in the wilderness, there's more than one purpose for the way God has these things done. For example, the whole Passover thing. It wasn't just to protect the firstborn, but it was to have a pattern for the Messiah that would come. That would be their Passover lamb. It talks about being under the cloud and going through the sea in Corinthians, regarding Jesus Christ, the rock that followed them. With these serpents, look at John chapter 3. Jesus Christ made reference of this incident in John 3. This is when he was having that conversation with Nicodemus. In verse 14, he said, "And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness," means that brass serpent that he put on a pole, "even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have eternal life." So just as those people that looked at that serpent on the pole, if they had been bitten by a serpent, they would not perish. They would not die, but they would continue to live. So those of us that had been, you might say, bitten by the serpent, who tempted Eve and caused the spiritual death of mankind, if we look to the one that was, the Son of Man lifted up on a pole, that we will not perish, but have eternal life. So God was not only doing that to heal the people at the time and teach them something, but many centuries later, Jesus Christ used that as an example to represent himself in the manner in which he would die. Because as the Messiah, it wasn't just that he died, but he had to die in a certain way, at the right time, at the right place, to accomplish the salvation for everybody else. Okay, so that's all for tonight. And next week, we will not have study night, because Sid and I will be going to Virginia, and we'll be teaching a class at Earl Burton's summer school. So we won't have study night next Monday, but the one after that we'll be back and we'll look at some of the things that Joshua did, and then after that we'll get into Elijah and Elisha and then Jesus Christ and the apostles and others that did miracles and healing. So we have a lot of exciting stuff ahead of us. Okay.